back to the Bramble Podcast. I'm Kim, I'm your host, and I am so grateful that you're here listening in today. Today's episode is going to be very personal. I'm going to share some personal stories, and I want you to get really personal too. I want you to go back in time. We're going to find some stories here. And if you listen to one of our, well, it's not one of our latest, but it's in the, I don't know, in the last few months, we had a very special podcast episode and blog post in which we talked about finding your body image story. So if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you probably listened to that episode, and it was all about going back in time and finding those short conversations and those events that happened early in your life that kind of started to define the way you looked at and also felt about your body, right? And that's what that episode was all about. And today we're adding a little twist to this, but I think it's so powerful to find the stories that are back, way back in your childhood and in your teenage years, where a lot of our relationship with food starts kind of forming, where a lot of our beliefs about food and our bodies start forming. And, you know, going back is so powerful. Therapists have known this for years, right? This is what therapy is all about. And here's what it's not. Going back in time to look for these things and looking back, it's not about feeling sorry for yourself. It's not about getting stuck in a blame cycle, right? Blaming mom, blaming dad, or blaming our situation, our life circumstances. It's not about that. It's not about living in the past. It's actually just about coming to a bigger sense of understanding. And of course, with that, when we find these little places where some of these issues got started, finding lots of compassion and love towards yourself and whatever issues you have now that maybe started way back then. So it's kind of understanding that you and the people around you are simply human, right? And that it's also the beginning stages of finding true healing. I think true healing happens when we dare to look back, and we dare to look back and we dive in deep and we see, you know, where these things started and why many of these things kind of build up on top of one another. And then we get all of these messages from the world around us as adults, and we feel now sometimes powerless, when in fact we can start looking into things and kind of deconstructing things and building them back up the way we want to build them and the way we want to make them, because this is all about developing a saner relationship with food, right? And I don't know, finding that true healing, especially when it comes to food and eating and body image issues, I think it's so important. And this is one of the topics we love to talk about here in the podcast, right? It's not always about the delicious food and the tips to help you in the kitchen and all of that, but it's also about eating and your eating habits and your relationship with food. That's so important. I couldn't have a podcast about cooking and food and not talk about this, because for me, everything was linked. All of my story with food and with going vegan and with making choices, it's all linked to my past and to these stories. So since we already went on that little scavenger hunt to find your body image story, that episode is so powerful and it's so personal. Sometimes I remember a couple of the stories I told you and I kind of just, I flinch a little bit because it's very personal, but we're all kind of family here, so that's okay. But today we're going on a different ride. We're going back in time to look for these specific moments in which we got these important cues about food and eating and dieting. And here's our mission. Our mission is to dismantle these and to kind of build our views about food back up in a more healthy and pleasurable way, especially a pleasurable way that excludes punishment, that excludes guilt. Doesn't that sound nice? Don't you feel like taking a deep breath when you say something, when you hear that or when you say it? I do. I feel like taking a deep breath. I think it sounds so cool. It sounds so nice to think about food in a new way. And as usual, of course, I'm sharing some of my stories. It's only fair, right? If I'm asking you to look back, I have to share some of mine. And it's going to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, because so many of us are worried about the future. We're looking at our food in terms of now, and we've never even thought about this way. We've never even thought about maybe going back and seeing where these things started. We have no clue. And my stories might help you, get some ideas as to where to start looking for these stories for you. One key factor into finding those first little cues we might have gotten as kids or teens when it comes to eating is going to the first moments we heard the words good or bad or punishment or reward when it came to food. Those are like the little gems, right? Those are the little places where we might find a lot of information that is going to help us on this quest of finding that balance. And you'll just be surprised as to what you'll discover, especially if you go back to thinking about these moments. If you've never thought about that before, this is where I think you might find a couple of interesting things. So with time, this is what happens, right? With time, these belief systems that we start developing, especially when things happen at such a young age, they become almighty and powerful because we don't have all the information we have now as adults, right? We can't make decisions around them. We can't really look for more information about them. We just take everything really like, you know, that's the way it is. So with time, what happens is that these belief systems, they start gaining more traction. And then we add on the constant messages in the media and magazines and television. And you know what happens then, right? I'm not even talking about body image here, although we all know there's plenty of that too, especially in the media these days. I'm talking about the constant fear-mongering and how often we click on an article on Facebook, for example, that has a title that reads, "Stop eating these three foods and start losing weight effortlessly." Or another one, typical one, "Five foods that fight cellulite." Or another one, "Remove this from your diet and stop cravings." You know what I mean, right? These articles that offer these messages that kind of, I don't know, they instill the sense of fear in us. And don't even get me started on others that are even more radical. You know, I could just go on and on. And the word healthy, quote unquote healthy, it is thrown around so much these days. I've recently been feeling the need to make a whole video with my definition of healthy eating, which I can tell you right now varies greatly from what we're hearing day in and day out. This word is starting to go into dangerous territory because we're using it for all sorts of unhealthy relationships to food. And I don't know, I'm kind of worried about this. I'm kind of worried about where we're taking this word. And there's just so much fear attached to this, right, nowadays. And we are bombarded with messages about food, about eating, about weight. And these, they only add to whatever foundation we started building with those early messages. But it's with shining a light on those first few, on those first memories where I like to begin. There's so much work to do along the way, and there's so much work to do with the messages that are thrown at us every single day now. But I like to begin in the past. So are you ready? We're gonna take a trip down the food memory lane, and it starts right now. And my first story, I have so many stories about food because food was such an issue for me for many reasons. If you're new to the podcast, you can go to bramble.com and check out our about page and read my story. You'll get a lot of details there. And of course, I talk about it in lots of different episodes, but I have countless stories to tell you, but today I just want to tell you two stories because these two stories really, they were just kind of the foundation for a lot of things that happened later with my relationship with food. So my first story, I've given these little names, right? So my first story is called "Can Saturday Please Come Sooner?" aka my chocolate story. Now let me start this off by saying that I love my mother. Okay, this is a Kim loves her mother disclaimer, okay? You know that if you read my personal story, the one I just told you about that you can find at bramble.com. You know what an amazing rock star my mother was. So this is in no way a critique on her parenting skills or on yours if you're a parent and you've been giving your children some of these cues that I'm going to talk about now, all right? Most parents, the great majority of parents, have truly the best intentions, and I know that my mom thought that she was doing her absolute best, and let me just say this, she did her absolute best, and her best was, quite frankly, awesome. I had the best mother on this planet. I dare you to think of one that was even better, besides yours, of course. because we all think that our moms are the best, but my mom was truly an incredible woman. And so remember that these back to the past exercises, they are not about the blame game. That is so important. They're not about the blame game. They're about building a little map, right? To help you rebuild a stronger foundation and improve your relationship with food. That's all. It's not a blame game. So I just wanted to get this out of the way because I love my mother so much. And I felt I had to give this I love my mama disclaimer. So now that it's over, we can move on to the story. Now, although the words diet and cellulite and weight or fat were never once uttered in my house, and I know I'm completely lucky. I know most people do not have this amazing start, right? These words are constantly heard. We get these messages, sometimes not even verbally, but we see our parents doing these things and talking about these things or worrying about these things. That was non-existent in my house. And I know that's very strange, but it was non-existent. So there you go. My mom, she did this right. Okay. She was amazing. And so these were never uttered in my house. I never saw my mom dieting. I never, you know, saw talk about these issues or body composition or body fat or anything like that. This was just not a part of my life. But my mom had three rules when it came to food. That was it. Three rules. At least as far as I can remember. Number one, rule number one, I was always encouraged to try new foods. My mom was a total foodie. All my family is filled with foodies and great cooks and, you know, people who love to eat. So I was really encouraged to try these new foods. And I would always get a little piece of chocolate at the end of the meal if I tried something new. So my mom would say, okay, if you try this, if it was something I didn't want to eat, if I just tried it, I would get my little piece of chocolate as a reward. That was rule number one. Rule number two was that other than this mom-administered chocolate prize, chocolate could only be eaten on Saturdays and Sundays. That was rule number two in my house. Rule number three was the same thing with soda, only for the weekend, right? Soda and chocolate only for Saturdays and Sundays. Now, as you can probably tell, I had an absolute love of chocolate when I was a child. It was my favorite thing ever. And as you can see, you know, all of the rules kind of revolved around chocolate, right? And it was just my favorite thing ever. I was obsessed with chocolate, but I was also striving to be such a good daughter and not cause any trouble at home since we had enough going on with my mother's illness. My mother was chronically ill. She was ill all my life. And this little fact created a perfectionistic tendency in every single area of my life. This is something that I'm still trying to remove. It's a struggle. I'm much better at this now, but this has been such a huge marker in my life, and I've had to really work on removing this because trying to be a perfectionist, it's not good. No matter how many times people tell you, oh, that's so good, you're such a perfectionist. Trust me when I tell you that when this is a part of every single thing you do, it only causes trouble. At least it was for me. So in this particular case, it meant one thing, that little perfectionistic tendency, that trying to be that perfect daughter, it meant one thing. Not only was chocolate reserved for Saturday, but I was actually given the chocolate bars to kind of abide by the rules for myself. So I was given the chocolate, but I couldn't eat it. I was given the chocolate, and on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I would have those chocolate bars in my possession. I remember I stored them in my little toy fridge in my little toy kitchen, and I would go almost every day. I would open the packages. I would smell the chocolate. I would count the days that remained until Saturday arrived, and then I would close the chocolate back up, and I would put it back. Now, I haven't told you this part of the story. I was around 5 or 6 years old. So try to picture that for a second, right? I remember this so clearly, going back to that fridge, that little toy fridge, and opening that package and daydreaming about and touching it and smelling it and not eating it, not being able to eat it until Saturday came along. Now, in the post that goes with this episode, you have to go check it out because I have included a video called The Marshmallow Experiment. And this video is about gratification in children with food. And although it's a slightly different situation, it illustrates my chocolate in the toy fridge problem to a total T. It's really, I saw the faces of these kids and I could just see myself. So I'm just gonna tell you what it's about, just in case you really don't have time to go back to your computer right now, but I highly recommend you watch it. You can also find it on YouTube, but I've put it in the post at brownwell.com just to make it easier for you. So in this experiment, kids are given a plate with one marshmallow, and the researcher tells the kids that they can eat the marshmallow now if they want to, or if they wait a little bit until the person comes back, they can have two marshmallows instead of one, right? So they can have the marshmallow right now, they're looking at it, they can have it if they want to, no rules against that, but if they wait with that marshmallow in front of them, they wait a little bit until the researcher comes back with more, they can have two. You just have to see what these kids do with that marshmallow. You have to see it. I can't even describe it. And you have to watch the video till the very end, because that last kid, it's just gonna both break your heart and make you crack up at the same time. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry, because it just reminded me of me so much and of what it meant to have that food and not be able to eat it at such a young age. Now, my mom wasn't doing this to be mean. She wasn't doing this because she wanted to, I don't know, just make me go crazy. She just was so proud of the fact that I was so responsible and that, you know, I could handle it for myself. And she was trying to maybe teach me a little bit about responsibility. I don't know. I can't ask her now. But my mother, she told her friends about my incredible willpower and sense of responsibility constantly. She praised it. She said that it was incredible and beyond that of any kid she had ever seen. And I felt so proud of the fact that she was proud of me because of this. I heard these messages constantly. I heard her tell this chocolate story constantly. And I was so proud that she was proud. And this just became the battle of desire versus wrapped up chocolate that I couldn't touch. And I have to tell you that I never once ate it before Saturday, which tells you a lot about me, right? It tells you a lot about that kid. Now, I'm a very different person now, and thank goodness I've healed a lot of these issues where I tried to be so perfect all the time. But it tells you a lot about what that childhood was like in many areas, in so many areas, because I didn't want to cause trouble at home, and I wanted my mom to be proud of me, and I wanted to be a perfect kid. I just didn't want to add anything more on the plate, right? And what do you think happened when Saturday came around? What do you think happened? Right? What do you think happened? I'm seriously asking you, like, think about it. What do you think happened? You guessed it, right? A chococoma. That's it. Chococoma, complete chococoma. And this isn't, if this isn't a metaphor, or rather a precursor to the perils of dieting, I don't know what is, right? That feeling of total restriction and then going overboard when you're given a green light, when it's a cheat day, when it's a special occasion, you get it, right? Okay, I guess you know why that was my story number one. It was a powerful story. My heart kind of shrinks when I talk about it, because I have so much compassion for that little kid. And I have so much compassion for my mom too and what she was trying to teach me, and you know, but it has helped. It has helped to look at that story. But let's move on to story number two, because this is about giving you examples of stories so you can go back and find your own. That's all this is, right? So story number two, last one, is food is the best medicine against sadness, that is. That's the name of my story. Food is the best medicine against sadness, that is, or aka my milkshake story. So this is story number two. This one was so powerful, it had a deep impact in my relationship with food all my life. It took years for me to be able to find other sources of comfort other than food and overeating. Now, when I was around 7 or 8 years old, I came down with the chicken pox. And my mom, who struggled with that chronic illness I mentioned before and had a lot of problems with her immune system, she had to move out. She had to move out of the house. And my dad was never in the picture. It was just me and my mom. So this meant that they had to pay my nanny extra, and she would live with me for the next 3 weeks until I was fully recovered. So for those 3 weeks, I couldn't even see my mother. I couldn't even see her. And we only had telephone conversations every day, and this was particularly hard for me since my mom and I were extremely close, and I had never been apart from her for such a long period of time. In fact, I might have, maybe this was the first time we were ever apart. I'm not 100%, I mean, other than her going to the movies or something like that. But I don't think, I kind of remember her going on her first trip without me. And I think this happened after this chickenpox moment. So it might have been the first time, 3 weeks, and not being able to even see her. And, you know, it was a long period of time. And in between the fun of not being at school, which was great fun, as you can probably guess, and of course having more time to play at home, in between those moments of exhilaration because of those two factors, I felt terribly, terribly sad. I felt so sad. I missed her constantly. And whenever I started to cry or get upset, my nanny made me her special milkshake. It was creamy, it was cold, and I remember so clearly, I would sit on the kitchen counter, which was also very special because normally the kitchen was, you know, a place to cook and prepare stuff, and I wouldn't like get on top of the kitchen counter and sit there. I was a teeny, teeny kid. I was so short I'm still short, but I was like really, really short at that age. So this was like so cool, right? I was on the kitchen counter sitting up there, and I would drink this milkshake from a very special kind of tall, colorful glass while my nanny tried to make me feel better. And this was my first taste of emotional eating. And soon I found myself drinking a milkshake every day and heading to the kitchen for cookies and cakes or whatever I could find. Whenever I was feeling scared or bored or anxious or nervous, long after my chickenpox was gone and my mom returned home. So this started, I learned what we all know now as adults, right? That food makes us feel better. But I learned it in a very powerful and deep way, in a very hard moment, and in a very scary and sad moment in my life, and at a very young age. So this really stuck with me. The sense that it helped heal sadness, and it helped make you feel better. Now, of course, emotional eating to some degree is normal. We're emotional beings, and it's normal, and it's okay to sometimes go for the ice cream when we're feeling sad or we need a little bit of comfort. That is normal human behavior. But I started to take it to to a not so balanced place, because what was happening was I wasn't looking at the feelings. I was looking at the ice cream only. And that's where I think things get tricky with emotional eating, right? When you just suppress everything and you don't want to look into it and you don't want to feel it and you don't want to talk about things, but you just want to cover those feelings up. That's when emotional eating gets tricky. I have many more food stories and even more dieting stories. We'll someday do the episode on the dieting stories, because that's almost like a really dark comedy. And, you know, but it's sad. It's sad. Those dieting stories are so sad. And those stories with all of the terrible effects that those had on my relationship with food. So that's coming at another time. And we can talk about more food stories at another time too. But today, I thought I would just keep it simple with examples of the two factors that really influenced my eating the most. And I picked these two because they were the ones that were more closely related to the issues I've struggled with as an adult when it comes to eating and as a teenager. So the fact that there were rules with eating, right? These were the two factors that influenced my eating the most. The fact that there were rules with eating that some foods were good and some were bad, and especially that being perfect with your eating and going by the rules and having willpower and having self-control were praised and a source of pride. This is such a trap. This was such a trap for me. And this is one of the things that influenced my eating. And this is what I took from these stories. This is what I took from living those experiences, right? There are rules. Foods are good. Some are bad. And that being perfect with your eating and going by the rules and self-control, it's praised and it's a source of pride. And this is something that we get day in and day out from the media. Am I right? We see this every day. Every day, every time we're on Facebook, every time we're on Twitter, every time we turn on the TV, every time we watch the news now, because now everybody's talking about these things all the time, looking for another way to add to these rules. And so this was the number one thing that these kind of stories taught me, or how they influenced my eating. The second one was the fact that food can heal emotional turmoil, even if it's just momentarily, but very effectively. And we all know that. Now, after years of struggling with dieting and overeating and emotional eating, it has helped me so much to pinpoint where these issues began and, you know, where I learned those lessons and how I could almost go back as an adult and talk to the kid inside of me and teach her a different way of seeing food and eating. This is something that I had to do, and it's something that has helped me so much. I can't even tell you. And this is the only reason why I'm telling you these stories, because they're kind of sad for me to tell, and I wouldn't be telling them otherwise, other than to tell you that when you go back and you look deep down, you'll find a place where you can start that healing. And, you know, it taught me such a different way to see food. Well, it taught me where my issues started, but it taught me how I could kind of go back to that little girl and teach her a way that was all about balance and not deprivation, and one in which pleasure and satisfaction was a part of every meal and every day, not just a prize for being perfect, right? After which all hell breaks loose and I could eat way beyond my hunger levels and what my hunger levels were telling me. So this is something that I had to kind of tell myself and teach myself, because this isn't what I learned as a kid. And I don't know, the way out of restriction and dieting, I think, is through a constant rebuilding of these belief systems. These are strong core beliefs that we have, that we've kind of created out of our experiences. And I think that the way out is through that rebuilding of those, and especially through the practice of getting back in tune with our body's signals. But it all starts with that trip back to the past. At least that's how I feel. And that's where I started to kind of build things back up. And it's so important that we do that. If we want a sane relationship with food, to enjoy food again, to feel normal when it comes to eating, and just to feel free, I think it's very special, because then food gets fun. And that's pretty cool, right? Okay, so I would love to hear some of your food stories. I'd love for you to leave them in the comments at bramble.com in the post that goes with this episode, or send them over if they're very private and you don't want to put them on the web. Send them over, send me an email. I'd love to listen, and I'd love to hear about what you went through as a kid. And of course, don't forget to share the post using the little buttons in the post at bramble.com. Share it with anybody who is striving to find a better balance. Share this podcast episode. You know, anybody who's trying to improve their relationship with food, be at peace with food, quit that deprivation cycle, and just be able to enjoy mealtime again in a sane way, in a way that is just about eating and talking with the person in front of you and just enjoying yourself and satisfying those taste buds and cooking and getting back into that kitchen and just enjoying life, enjoying all the other aspects of life, because it's not all about the food, and it's not all about your diet, and it's not all about the weight and That is such an important lesson. And I hope that my little stories inspired you a little bit to go and find some of your own. And as usual, I can't thank you enough for listening. Please, if you can, leave us a little rating and review on iTunes. It really helps other people find us. And I will see you next week on our date, Thursday. We always have a date on Thursday. And I can't thank you enough for listening. This was a personal post for me, but I'm so glad I did it. And I'm so glad you're there listening in on the other side. See you next week, everybody.